Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
As we prepare to decide what kind of person we want to lead the country for the next 4 years, we wanted to step back for a moment and consider a broader question. What does it mean to be an American? This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. There are probably 320 million responses to that question, and we're eager to hear yours throughout the hour. Anchoring our conversation, we've invited three people who have chosen to make their lives in the United States after growing up abroad. Dr. Mona Kazim Shah hosts the radio show Politics Today at Fun Asia Radio. She's a lawful permanent resident of the U.S. Kwame Koto is a veteran programs manager for Hire Heroes USA, an Army veteran and a U.S. citizen who immigrated from Togo. And Javier Hirabet is a student at the University of Texas at Arlington, a U.S. citizen who emigrated from Mexico, and he is an intern here in the KERA newsroom. They all join us today as part of NPR's A Nation Engaged project. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you for having us.
So I want to get a little information about each of you, and Mona, we'll start with you. You moved to the U.S. from Pakistan in 1999. Did you expect then that you would stay?
No, I didn't. But that was always a possibility. I had too much attachment with my country, too many roots there. I'd spent all my life there. But slowly and surely, I started thinking of this place as my home. And there came a point, it was really a defining moment in my life when I went back. I used to go every year. And 1 year I went, and it just wasn't home anymore. It was kind of sad. It was bittersweet.
Do your friends and relatives in Pakistan now look at you and say, oh, she's so American?
No, they don't. They don't, because I'm still very much a Pakistani. I try to be a mix, and I think I do a pretty good job at that. And also, I think most when your family is not there anymore, when your family is either gone or moved, then that also takes away because most of my family is here in the U.S., so yeah. That also, I think, helps in feeling at home now.
Was there anything that surprised you about the U.S. that you had not expected before you arrived, or vice versa?
You know, a very small thing. I don't know if people can relate to it or not, but coming from Pakistan, I was raised in a military dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I moved here, to drive alone at night was huge.
Just
without locking
my
car. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd sit in the car, lock our doors. Things were pretty bad. So unfortunately, that's still the case in not all areas, but many areas back home. But yeah, that was huge. And then, then slowly but surely, driving across town alone, there's no concept of being alone, a woman alone on the road in a car. That was huge. And it doesn't even bother me anymore. It doesn't even... I'm not conscious of it.
You don't notice it.
Yeah, I don't notice it anymore. So small little things like that.
Kwame, you moved here in 2001 seeking political asylum after covering human rights abuses in Togo as a journalist. What made you realize you needed to leave Togo, and how did you choose the United States?
Well, in 2000, I wasn't even thinking about coming to U.S. in the first place. But, dreaming about making my country, one of the freest country in the world. We have a dream as a journalist to make sure some issues are covered, especially human rights issues. But for those who know Africa very well, dictatorship, like Mona mentioned, dictatorship is the norm. And the free speech that we take for granted here today, it's not something you get when you are in Africa. So the job became a little difficult, and my parents started getting very worried that something bad may happen. So, I had some close call, mm-hmm. and U.S. was gracious enough to offer me a student visa to come to U.S. and seek asylum. So when I arrived, I went to school, straight to school, but with the hope that I would go back. But the situation hasn't changed. And if I go back, it's probably going to be the same. So I sought asylum while I got to, I arrived at the U.S., not even being able to speak English in the first place.
Goodness.
So, that's.
And since then, you've gotten two master's degrees, right?
I do. Yeah. I have, my first master's in journalism from University of North Texas, UNT, and then after the military service, I used my GI Bill to get another master's, which is in a public administration, a field that I love very well, and also a nonprofit management, what I'm doing right now.
Military service, you joined the Army in 2007?
Yes, I did join the Army in 2007. U.S. military is a very... it's a very smart institution. They sent me back to Africa. They deployed me back to Africa, to Djibouti. So we work covering Somalia, the East African regions in general, working on a school project, building wells, and building civil infrastructures that we do to help those countries and alleviate poverty.
What did it feel like to return to the continent, not the country you were from, but the continent you were from, as someone who was close to achieving U.S. citizenship?
How it feels like?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I knew Africa. I grew up in Africa, but I thought I knew Africa, but that part of Africa took me off guard. First, there's nothing there. It's just rocks and deserts. And I came from the forest, area, tropical region in West Africa. And that took me, it took me a while before I knew that was a part of Africa. And also, of course, poverty is a little rampant in that area more than it is in West Africa. So, yeah.
Javier, you are the newest arrival here in the U.S. You've been here since 2008 when you were just 15. You came because your mom, who works for Univision, got a job transfer.
Yeah. My mom got the job at Univision in 2008, and she moved here to Farmers Branch. And my dad and I stayed in Mexico City until I finished my last year of middle school there. And after I finished, I moved here.
Middle school is not an easy time to move, between middle and high school. What was the transition like for you socially?
I actually, when my parents said that we were going to move to Dallas, I was really, really excited. I wanted to move here. I wanted to experience something new. And coming here, well, it was just starting over, making new friends, meeting new people. I was really excited about it.
Did you already speak English before you came?
I knew how to read and write English. I didn't know how to speak very well because I learned, in school we'd read and we'd write essays and homework, but never speak. So over here, I put that into practice and I learned.
What was different when you got here? Anybody who knows any other country from movies and TV shows is apt to be surprised by what life is really like.
Here?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know how crazy Dallas was on football. And seeing my, I started high school here in Marcus High School in Flower Mound, and seeing that high school and how much, seeing like a pep rally for the first time, or the homecoming stuff that some girls wear, and all that culture, it was completely like new to me. You don't even see that much of that stuff in the movies, but seeing that here was crazy.
For all three of you, football, where you're from, is a very different sport than the word that jumps to mind here in the U.S.
Yes. For us, it's cricket.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband is born and raised here, so he is a football fan, and he would always give me those analogies. Imagine it like cricket in Pakistan. Imagine, would you ask anybody who's watching cricket to go and get something in the middle of the match? Think of it as cricket. And so then I got, it's like religion, honestly. Mm-hmm. I went to a Colts game. He's a Colts fan. He's from Midwest. So we went to a game once, and I was surprised with thousands and thousands of people in the state. I had never seen anything like that before in my life. So that was a pretty cool experience for me.
Yeah, like Mona said, in Africa, football, soccer is the religion. On Sundays, when you have a big game, people are already in the stadium the day before. on a Saturday.
Oh, my gosh.
They're drinking, they're dancing, they're doing whatever they need to do to support their team. And they're already doing that. But when I came here, football, American football, was the big deal. Soccer was nowhere to be found. I felt a little sad, but slowly I became the Dallas Cowboy fan. So, yeah, it's a big deal here too. But outside the U.S. or in Africa, soccer also feels the same way.
It's a coincidence. We invited all three of you. It's a coincidence that you've all worked in journalism. But I wonder if you can each speak to the differences you see between working in the U.S., where we have a lot of freedom, but also a pretty rough and tumble climate, and the countries where you came from, where life can be more dangerous, frankly, for journalists.
Mm-hmm. For instance, Pakistan is one of the most dangerous countries to report from. It's probably the 8th or under 10 most dangerous nations. And you'd be surprised that even though I'm here in Dallas and I report on hard-hitting subjects or interview people who are, how should I put it, who are not so popular, and I'm also an activist, so I try to show their real face to people who are listening to my shows. And the next thing you get is this email, a list of threats over the emails or texts or Facebook or inboxes. However, you can imagine. So I was talking to Kwame before, and I was telling him that I can't even imagine what life is like for reporters and for journalists who are actually on the ground in Pakistan and trying to report the facts from there.
And we should be clear, too, that, you know, people always think about, you know, foreign correspondents. Americans have a very American-centric mm-hmm. view. Mm-hmm. It's most dangerous for people living in these countries because they're from there, people who are living in Togo and are citizens and people in Pakistan, more than it is for people who come in from elsewhere to tell these stories.
Absolutely. I mean, I haven't gone back home in 7 years just because I'm scared. I'm scared for my life. I have a family. I'm not going to say I'm so brave I want to go and die. No, I want to work. I want to live, and I want to report the facts. So I can be more effective sitting here and be free in expressing my views than I am from over there.
It's a big difference between what I knew back then when I was a journalist, as a reporter for a newspaper, and what is going on today. Africa back then was ruled by brutal dictatorship, and that's known for everyone. But today, the Africa that 10 years ago was not a place to live, it's changing. And I have to say that because I see that on a daily basis. There are things that are being reported from Togo, from Nigeria, from Ghana, that you would not be able to report 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that Africa is changing mm-hmm. for the best. And I just want to put it out there. Back 15 years ago, it's a different story. And I think our listeners also need to know that. But Africa has changed a lot.
I'm glad you pointed that out, and I'm glad it's happening. We're speaking this hour about what it means to be an American with Kwame Koto, with Mona Kazim Shah, and with Javier Hidibet. We will come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372. You can email think at kera.org or find us on Twitter at kerathink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Fall registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about what it means to be an American. And my three guests are people who have chosen to be Americans after growing up in other places. Dr. Mona Kazim Shah is host of the radio show Politics Today for Fun Asia Radio. She is an immigrant from Pakistan and a legal permanent resident. Kwame Koto is veteran programs manager for Hire Heroes USA. He's an immigrant from Togo who came as a political refugee. He sought political asylum, excuse me. And Javier Hiribet is a KERA intern, student at the University of Texas at Arlington, recently took the oath to become a naturalized citizen. Javier, there's a picture of you on our website right now taking the oath. And when I saw the photograph, I have to tell you that I got choked up. Was it emotional for you?
It was very emotional. I was there. My family was there, my mom and dad, and I had seen my mom do this, so I thought it was not going to be that emotional, but it was, they played a video from the president saying, like, welcome, and they told us what our rights were going to be about voting and stuff, and then a person was reading a list saying the oath, and saying the oath, just looking around at people. Everyone was really, really excited that they finally got there. And the best part that day was that after saying the oath, the guy next to me, a complete stranger, never met him before, and he was from Africa. He, like, turned around and, like, gave me a hug. Hmm. And, you know, he was so happy that he just turned around and he said, welcome, and shook my hand and gave me a hug. It was really moving.
What do you remember, Kwame?
You're talking about emotion, Chris. My ceremony took place in the brand new building, immigration building that was built in Irvine. And we were about 12 service members, and with the full honor, the place was packed. And we became a U.S. citizen that day. That was very, very emotional. And with the mayor of Irvine, U.S. Military officials, a lot of people, and that, frankly, was very emotional. And my wife was there, and she couldn't even stop crying. Mm. I mean, all of us, we had tears in our eyes, and it's very memorable.
Do you all always feel welcome here? Are there people who make you feel less than someone who was born here?
No, I haven't had that.
Really?
No, I haven't. You know, except after 9/11, mm-hmm. I have never, ever experienced that. And that, too, I think we were in a small town in Midwest. I don't think that was the case because I had friends and family in D.C. And when we would tell them what was going on, they would be surprised. They would be like, that's not the case over here at all. And I know they were hate crimes, but not to my relatives or my immediate friends.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. So I never really, and honestly, over there in that small town where we were, the neighbors were kind of, they were so supportive and so protective of us. And I remember my neighbor telling me, don't open the door if you don't recognize the person on the door. Call me and I'll get out of my house and check who's knocking at your door. So, and we all are still friends to this day. We love each other. She's like a family member. She's like a grandmother to my kids. So honestly, I mean, I've ever always felt very welcome and very loved.
Chris, my situation is a little different. I have never felt that I am not welcome here. Largely because I can blend in. Mm-hmm. African-American population. When I walk on the street, no one knows that I'm from Africa unless I open my mouth with my thick accents. That is the only time they know I am not from here. But I've never experienced any animosity or anything that I can say that is, I'm not welcome here. No, it's the total opposite. When I was in the service, those years were the best years of my life. And I'm still friends with a lot of my service members, people I serve with. We still visit, our families meet all the time. And frankly, I will tell you a little story. When I arrived here, my first family that welcomed me, the Rush family back in Denton. And I still go there. My first Thanksgiving was with them. And they always invite us every year to celebrate Thanksgiving. Michael Rush, he is a professor. He used to be a professor at UNT. I am always welcome. And Mrs. Rush is my mom. We call her mom. So I have not experienced anything other than I'm welcome here.
Javier?
At school, I had maybe like, a few Hispanic jokes once in a while. But other than that, I think Texas is – well, that North Texas is a good place where I've never had any trouble other than, a couple comments by classmates in high school.
So Kwame and Mona, you both have children born and raised so far in the U.S., right? I wonder what it's like to – raise these children, have them be, so much a part of you, and yet culturally their experiences will be very different from the way you grew up. No matter how much you try to raise them the way you were raised, life is different here. Is that a sacrifice?
Not really, honestly. I can respect how they are and the country that's theirs because they are born here, they are raised here, and they feel more connected to America than Pakistan because so far they haven't visited the country. And when I'm gone, I mean, they won't even have that little connection they had. And who would they go back home to except as a tourist? So I can appreciate that and I can respect that. And a funny thing I'll tell you that they are obviously more Americanized than I am. And sometimes they're 6 years old and they correct me and my accent sometimes. And, Mom, it's not this, it's that. And I'm like, gee, thanks, girl. So I feel very secure in raising kids who know who they are.
Mm-hmm. It's the same. Look, my two daughters, they love to hear stories from Africa. But when you ask them, they will tell you my dad is from Africa. That means they don't feel like they are from Africa. Fully America. One of them preach every day that when she grows up, she will become a president. I said, good luck with that. But they don't feel like they are part of my experience. And frankly, I am fine with that. And they're free to choose where they want to belong. That's their choice. It's not my choice. I'll give them all the tools they need to make a decision, but I'm not going to make the decision for them. They make that decision when they grow up.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We're talking this hour about what it means to be an American. Let's go on the phone to Alex in Arlington. Hi, Alex.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Hello to everyone there at the table. We're talking about what it means to be here, living in the United States. I've been here for the past 23 years, and I cannot be prouder to be part of this nation as someone that lives here, because when I came, I was very, very welcomed by the people that received me. My father was here already, and I came to join him, and it has been a great journey. Then it took a completely different meaning after I was married here. My two kids were born here, American citizens, homeowner, contributing to society, paying my taxes every single year. You know, it's volunteering work that we have done. It's just a tremendous journey that it means a lot to me in this case. You were talking to your guest about perhaps the identity of the kids. They can enjoy the latest flick from superhero movie or watch a soap opera with their grandmother that is filmed in Mexico, or eat pizza or hamburger or enjoy tacos at the same time. So it's just beautiful to see that they're growing with the two cultures embedded onto them. The reason really why I'm calling after stating, how proud I am to be a part of this country is just simply after 23 years, still I do not have the right to vote. And, I am part of perhaps 11 million people that even though I am familiar with my congressman, with my senators, with my governor, obviously with my president and the candidates right now running for presidency, I am unable to make a decision and contribute in that kind of sense of the word. I do contribute very much in everything else that is part of society, But as of right now, that would happen to be the main detractor for me feeling as a whole in regards to being part of society.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate you sharing your experiences. And Mona, you are legally in the country. You don't have the right to vote because you're not a citizen. So I wonder, Javier and Kwame, how important it is to you to vote.
Well, I've been exercising this right since 2009. Every time I vote in local election and I vote in a national election. It is a right that I notice or I realize a lot of Americans don't exercise. I will be exercising mine this coming November. And frankly, I don't want to inject politics in this debate, but when you hear the political debate going on, you feel like there's going to be a time where I will not be welcome here. But at the same time, I have I'm a firm believer that the values upon which this country is built are not going anywhere. We can have fierce debates. The political environment can get really ugly, but when it's all said and done, we go back to our values, the value that founded this country. So I will be exercising my right.
Javier, this will be your first chance, right?
Yeah. I moved here, like I said, when I was 15, and in Mexico you have to be 18 to vote. So this is my first time voting ever. I've never voted in a local election or general election, so I'm excited to vote in November.
Hmm. I wonder, so it sounds like you both consider voting a responsibility of citizenship or of being an American. Are there other things that you feel you are required to do to be fully American?
Paying taxes.
Depends on who you talk to, but you don't get much choice, do you?
I think as a civilian, you have a role in conflict resolution, as I must put it. Hmm. And I think if we present ourselves as people and not a number that migrated from a certain country, I think people can connect with you better. So I think it's our responsibility also as immigrants to reach out to the locals and tell our stories and hear theirs. And on that individual level, if you connect, then you connect as people and as a nation, no matter where you're from, but you are under the same roof now, so to speak.
So I'll add to that by saying, naturally, we feel like we need to do a little more than an average American, because...
Like you have to set a better example?
Exactly. That's one of them. You have to build the way for your children to emulate. Mm-hmm. If you don't, they will be called children of immigrants. Hmm. But if you do, they are just like Americans. So I think we raise our own standard higher than the average American standard.
Javier?
I think, my fellow guests here are journalists who come from also other countries, and they talked about how difficult it can be to report in other places. So I think a responsibility that every American should have is to be informed, and because we have very good laws here, and we have the First Amendment that allows people to, you know, report freely, and people should take advantage of that and be informed.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's talk to Jack, who is, I guess, at DFW Airport. Hi, Jack. Hi, Jack. Jack, are you with us? Okay, we're going to move on. Let's speak next with Simret in Garland. Hi, Simret.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
This is Jack.
Oh, this is Jack. Okay. Well. Hi, Jack. I'm glad we got you. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm glad to be. I'm really happy to be on this show. I'm originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and I've been here very many years. I'm a U.S. citizen, I serve in the military here. And my question to the other Togo, how they feel that in the United States, none of the actual situation happening in Africa is reported on the news unless there's a really, really a lot of people dying. Like right now in the Congo, we don't have something really unprecedented about changing the constitution, and the president don't want to step down the election due in December. How do we feel about that, and how he personally feel about that by him being from Togo?
Thanks for your call, Jack.
Well, Jack, thank you very much. I follow every single news that's going on in Africa, and I know perfectly what you're talking about. Yes, Africa has political issues today. And if you know very well, the guy who is leading the dialogue movement there is from Togo. He is a former prime minister from Togo. He has been selected to lead the movement, to lead the dialogue movement, so all parties can talk. What I don't want people to say or to think that Africa is burning. No, we have our political system. It's not perfect, but it's improving. And Jack knows very well the dictatorship of Mobutu, who led that country for many, many, many years. And I'm pretty sure he will not prefer Mobutu to what is going on in Africa today or in his country today. I'm not saying everything is perfect, but Congo has come a long way. Congo was torn by war, but it's getting better. And I want to see things from the most optimistic side.
We're speaking this hour about what it means to be an American with three people who have chosen to be Americans. You just heard Kwame Koto. We're also speaking with Javier Hiribet and Mona Kazim Shah. If you would like to join our conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org or find us on Twitter at @KERAThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Fall registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking today about what it means to be an American as part of NPR's A Nation Engaged project. My guests are three people who grew up elsewhere and are now making their homes in the United States. Two are naturalized U.S. citizens, Javier Hiribet and Kwame Koto, and one is a permanent legal resident, Mona Kazim Shah. If you would like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Was there a moment, Mona, you mentioned visiting Pakistan and thinking it doesn't feel quite the way it once did, like home. Are there habits that you have now that you look at yourself and think, that is such an American thing to do?
It's actually the opposite. I still don't take running water for granted. And sometimes when I do the dishes, I think like, oh my gosh, if I was in Pakistan, I would be closing water between my washes or between scrubbing and using the water because it's expensive.
Yeah.
It's sometimes you have to buy. Sometimes you're 4 days without water and you have to depend on your reserve. So there are things that I catch myself still doing that are from Pakistan, like locking the car door. I still do that.
It's probably a good habit anyway.
It's a good habit also, but it's also that the threats haven't stopped. So I think that's also, it's a constant reminder that, oh gosh, you're always in danger, which probably you're not, but it just gets in your head and you just develop a few habits. So it's one of those things. But, other than that, I mean, I, I, I speak up a lot now. I'm not, you know, even though I spoke up a lot back home also, but not quite as much. And I think it's either my age or the fact that I'm older or I'm here, maybe combination of both. That and then I do catch myself saying to myself that, oh, I've become so American because I can say what I want to say now. But like Kwame said, you know, things in Pakistan are also changing. I mean, mm-hmm. we're very proud that the young generation that's over here and in Pakistan of Pakistani descent are speaking out. They're speaking up, and they are doing great work in writing, in journalism, in social activism, and things are changing. So
I'm glad that both of you have pointed this out, only because I think native-born Americans are typically very excited when someone chooses freely to come here and become an American. But it's almost like I wonder if we telegraph to you that what we want you to do is knock the place you came from in order to love the place you are. And I don't know that that's necessary.
It's not. I still catch myself saying things or doing things that a typical African guy would do.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
For example, I had to iron all my clothes, including my daughter's clothes, every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
That I keep doing. That's how my parents raised me to do.
Oh, you don't just shake them out after the dryer and hang them up in the closet.
I do not. I always iron, my clothes, and people, my friends, find it bizarre mm-hmm. that I keep doing it. But look, Chris, if you have lived in America for a long period of time, you feel you are from America. But when you are in America, you feel you are from Africa.
Hmm.
But when you go back to Africa, you don't belong there anymore. Mm-hmm. You feel like you are an American. So we are constantly in a dilemma. We don't belong there. We don't belong here. So where do we really belong? And sometimes I catch myself feeling so homesick.
Yeah.
Because my parents are still alive. They're there. And as a matter of fact, I don't listen to some Negro spirituals because I will cry by thinking about all some country music. You know, John Denver, Country Home.
Take Me Home,
Country
Roads. Home,
yeah. When I listen to those, I have tears in my eyes sometimes. And that's what immigrants go through. They don't really belong here. They don't really belong there either. So we are constantly doing a back and forth.
Javier, I saw you nodding your head.
Yeah. Well, I've been to Mexico City, I think, twice since I moved here. And when I go, it's really funny. I mean, it still feels like home to me sometimes, you know, seeing my family, seeing my grandma, seeing the places where I grew up, that, you know, the houses that my dad still owns there. But my friends keep me, like, they say, like, oh, what's wrong with your accent? You sound like an American now. You sound, you know, and they make fun of me because I sometimes I forget some words in Spanish and I'll just say it in English. And they'll make fun of me for that, which is just funny, you know. And but just like you said, it doesn't feel exactly like you belong there or here because you have kind of the best of both.
It's interesting, this idea of belonging to a place. It's something that humans seem to really crave. And sometimes that takes the form of staying where you've come from. And sometimes it takes the form maybe of looking for some other place that can be home. I wonder if in this very global world, there will be more and more people like you sitting here who feel connected to and disconnected from two worlds.
Yeah, it's very relatable when Kwame was talking about it. I can totally relate to that. And like I said earlier on, that when I go back, it's just not the same. Like it was growing up, then you come here, and this is home, but yet not quite. And it's a dilemma. It's a constant battle that we have to fight within ourselves. And in a way, I'm glad that my children will not have to go through the same struggle, you know. So that's comforting in a way. But I want to leave behind a legacy where they can relate to my country of origin a little bit and still in their hearts find a little bit of place for it and still call it home as well.
Let's go back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. We have Marcy on the line in Dallas. Hi, Marcy.
Hey.
Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. Welcome.
Well, I'm very grateful to be in America. It's the best place to be, and I've been here over 35 years. It's been amazing. Americans, they're very generous, very lovely.
Well, we're glad to have you. Do you have a baby there or a grandbaby with you?
Yes, I'm being blessed because I became a grandma to identical twins, so I watch them now. I'm from Central America, Nicaragua, and that's what we do. We stay home with our grandchildren, the majority.
Well, enjoy them. That does sound like a lucky thing, and I'm sure they're lucky to have you. Marcy, thank you so much for your call. Let's go next on the phone to Sharmina in Plano. Hi, Sharmina.
Hi, how are you, Chris?
Very well, thanks.
I'm loving the show, actually. I wanted to just share my personal experience. My parents are from Pakistan, but I was born and raised here, and now I'm raising kids here with my husband, who's from Pakistan. I can relate to everything that your three guests have mentioned. And it's funny just getting... You want them to be American in the sense of having an understanding of civic duty. So we do Girl Scouts, we do Scouts, you know, I've been registering people to vote and stuff like that. But then you also want them to appreciate the culture and where they came from and the values. So, you know, it's fun trying to keep a balance. Like, for example, like with food and stuff, we love American food. My husband is Pakistani, but he has a burger joint in Plano. And the kids would rather have American food every day. And if we eat Pakistani food like 2 days in a row or 3 days, they'll be like, what? You know, Desi food again? And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, we're Desi. And they're like, no, we're American. And I'm like, no, you know, go look in the mirror. you're Desi. Okay, so we're going to have Desi, you know. And, you know, but it's fun. They don't speak Urdu as well as I do. And I think when I was their age, I didn't. But I was blessed to have a chance to actually live in Pakistan for 5 years. And it's funny, when I was there, I felt like the foreigner over there, like some of your guests said. So it's an interesting experience, but, you know, you want them to fit in and understand where they are and understand the values and appreciate the sacrifices that their grandparents or their parents made to come here. And hopefully they'll all benefit from it and everyone around them will benefit from it.
Sharmina, thank you so much for calling. What about the food thing? Have you guys all sort of found favorite things that you love to eat here? And then are there things that you just can't get here that you miss?
I honestly love crunchy tacos. You know, all my friends there.
You have to turn in your Mexican card for saying that?
I kind of do, yeah.
You mean rolled tacos. You don't mean like...
No,
like
I mean crunchy tacos.
Like a hard shell Taco Bell taco.
Exactly.
Are you kidding?
I love those. And my parents are like, never want to go there. They're like, no, we hate those. We know how to make authentic Mexican food. I'm just, no, those are great. But if I do miss some of the real like... authentic food that you cannot find here.
Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's I can resist to any barbecue made in Texas. And I'll be honest, in that essence, I consider myself as an African cowboy living in Texas.
There were lots of them historically, by the way. African American cowboys.
I did not know that. Thank you, Chris. American barbecue, I became a fan of it, but now I'm getting older. I'm trying to cut down as you go. But I still eat African food. You know, it's a part of who I am. And my children don't like it that much. They are very picky, selective, but. That's the way they are, too. They're totally free to do that.
Yeah, so I'm the only one in my house who likes to eat Desi food, like Charmaine put it. My husband is also born and raised here, so are my kids. So they all like American food. And even if they eat Pakistani food, they like a milder, unauthentic version of it. Mm-hmm. So, because it's too spicy for them.
They like the crunchy taco version.
Exactly, crunchy taco version of Pakistani food.
Right. If you had to explain to somebody from the countries that you grew up in what it's like in the U.S. who had not been here, what would you tell them?
Well, I think Togo, in a nutshell, is a very tiny, small country. It's a French-speaking country, as you can tell from my accent. And Togo has a long, small but a long history of dictatorship, I say that, but I think that's enough. What I want people to know about Togo is that there's nothing like walking on the street with strangers welcoming you. Even if they don't know you, they always stop and greet. That's something I miss a lot. When I came here first time, I started walking on the street greeting people. I quickly noticed I need to stop because people don't stop and acknowledge. Mm-hmm. But Togo is a very diverse country. In the north part, you have mainly people who grow corn and all that. And in the south part, you have, where I am from, we have coffee and cocoa farmers. As a matter of fact, my grandparents and my parents are coffee and cocoa farmers. And I grew up working in a farm, just like that's why how I relate to American country songs that much. A lot of people don't understand why, but I do relate to a lot of those. Togo is a very small but vibrant country. It need improvement, of course, politically, of course, but you have people who are making miracles on a daily basis.
Well, before we have to let you all go, what would you tell people from Togo about the U.S.?
Well, that's kind of difficult because they pretty much know about America because we all have the effect of American cultural radiation. Mm-hmm. It is everywhere. But what I want them to know is that the freedom that America enjoys is essentially what got America to be where it is today. Without the freedom, there will never be America, United States of America, that we know today. So if they can emulate that, they will be on the path to growth.
Kwame Koto is Veteran Programs Manager for Hire Heroes USA and an immigrant from Togo, also a U.S. citizen. Javier Hiribet is a KERA intern and a student at the University of Texas at Arlington. He recently took the oath to become a naturalized U.S. citizen. He's from Mexico. And Mona Kazim Shah is host of the radio show Politics Today on Fun Asia Radio. She is originally from Pakistan, and we were talking today about what it means to be an American as part of NPR's A Nation Engaged. It's been a pleasure to have all of you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Alan Roberts. Samantha Guzman is associate producer with help on the phones today from Jeremiah Jensen. And our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. Our Twitter handle is at KERA Think. Mine is at Chris Boyd Think. You can contact us via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.